This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
A new movie opens up with mostly positive reviews, but it's so controversial, even some on the left are saying that it's a bridge too far. We go there now on Tactics. Good morning, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Great to be with you this morning, and despite the cold weather, I was able to make it in and everything is going well. I hope that you're having a good day as well. Most of you probably already at work, already at your desk, just listening to me in the background, and that's great. It is good to have you with us, whether you're listening over terrestrial radio or the iHeart app, or the News Radio 1440 app. There's lots of opportunity for you to listen, and we're glad to have you in however you choose to do that. This next story really does show how people can talk out of both sides of their mouth and not even realize it. And I mean this particular story kind of shows that on a larger impersonal scale. In other words, a community scale, where a community can say they value one thing and then do the exact opposite and not even realize there's a hint of irony there. We can do this as people as well, but this new film that's coming out, it's called Call Me By Your Name. And for those of you unaware with the premise of the movie, it is a love story, using that term loosely here, between a 24-year-old and a 17-year-old man, both men. So this particular one, it romanticizes and glorifies not only homosexuality, but also pedophilia. And it's supposed to be this wonderful love story between this older man who grooms this 17-year-old to have sex with him, and then, of course, eventually does. And that's the premise of the whole movie. There is a new piece out about this particular movie in the Boston Globe. Not exactly a right-leaning publication, and the person writing it is not necessarily a right-wing person either. This woman, Cheyenne Montgomery, is neither a conservative nor against homosexuality. Based on what I read about her, I did a little research on her. She's not against homosexuality like most Christians are, like I am, doesn't think there's necessarily anything wrong with that. But her problem with this particular movie is that she claims, and is right, based on everything that I've seen about it, that this film glorifies pedophilia and says that there's nothing wrong with it. And before long, and this is not her writing, this is my concern, not that it's not already reprehensible in the scenario that I just gave. But how long is it before Hollywood, if they'll go this far, how long is it before they don't mind glorifying a relationship between someone with a greater age gap? 24 and 17, you know, that's a pretty big one. But how long before we have another movie about a relationship, maybe not even necessarily a homosexual relationship, a movie that glorifies a love story between maybe a 30, 35-year-old teacher and a 14-year-old kid? How far away is that if this continues to go down the path that it already has taken? And remember that culture is upstream from politics. Here we are now, and think about how quickly this has turned over. Barack Obama said that he believed in traditional marriage to get elected the first time. Now, I believe, as I think most people believe, including people on the left, that he's actually always supported gay marriage. But he did not think that for a general election he could win that saying that he was a supporter of gay marriage. That was in 2008 when that election took place. So if you think about that, that means that even someone as far left-leaning and with as many far-left principles as Barack Obama put his finger in the air and decided, yeah, that's something I can't do and still get elected. Now, the second the approval rating for homosexuality went over 50%, he immediately came out of the closet, pun intended, as someone who supported gay marriage and gay, air fingers quote, rights. Think about how far we've come in that short amount of time. That was just in 2008. And where did a lot of that come from? Movies like Brokeback Mountain, sitcoms like Will and Grace. Culture normalized that practice in our culture. We had popular culture making movies and TV, saying there's nothing wrong with it, it's normal, these people are just like everybody else, it's perfectly healthy, there's lots of people in healthy relationships. That ignores the statistics that say that, for example, homosexuality has a high degree of abuse, that putting a child in a situation like that to be raised by either two male or two female parents has devastating effects on them. We ignored all that because culture depicted it as normal and healthy and perfectly okay, and there's nothing at all wrong with the people engaged in this activity. How long does it take before we've normalized pedophilia? Because, again, if we're continuing down that road, and as fast as things move today, 2008 was just a decade ago. A decade from now, is pedophilia going to be legalized in certain states? Maybe even nationwide? We don't know. But that's another thing on the agenda. And in this particular piece by Miss Montgomery in the Boston Globe, again, not a conservative, not anti-homosexuality, just talking about the problems with an older man and a child being engaged in a relationship like this. She calls out the danger of glorifying this kind of abuse and pedophilia. And the way that she does it is by talking about her own experiences. This is a woman who, when she was 15 years old, was groomed by one of her math teachers and eventually consented to. And I know that legally you can't give consent under the age of 18. That's why it's a crime. But I'm just saying that in her mind, she was volunteering to be involved in a sexual relationship with him. And years later, I mean, she immediately talked about how she felt regret, but years later, looking back on it, after trying to justify it in her own mind for years that it was her choice and that she did the right thing, she looks back and saw how abusive and how problematic and how much damage that relationship did to her physically, emotionally, psychologically, and interestingly enough, talks about how this movie specifically mirrors some of the exchanges that she had with her abuser when they took place. For example, the way that he would essentially use a punishment and reward system, for example, going and asking how you're feeling, trying to get to know you, and as soon as the answer was one that they didn't like or they didn't want to give an answer, they would go somewhere else, stop giving them attention until they sought them out for more attention. This is a person that is grooming a young boy for his own sexual gratification. And that's what she points out, having looked at the film and at her own situation. She's saying that they're mirror images of one another in a lot of ways, which is terrifying to think, honestly, how realistic the movie is in that sense. That it would even show people how to get inside a teenager's head to be able to abuse them in that particular way. This is something that we should all be concerned about because it does affect our culture, and if we do not take a hardened stance against it, pedophilia is going to be normalized just like homosexuality, marriage, divorce, remarriage, rinse and repeat. All these things that we're having problems with our relationships are because we have degraded ourselves, and in large part because culture has made it acceptable. How many romantic comedies are there when somebody, for example, is married and then winds up getting divorced, and then they meet the real one? That started a really long time ago, and now we've got to the point where marriage means very little. And I believe that in certain ways, whether certain people on the left meant to do it or it's just a side effect, degrading the marriage has become the mission of the left in a lot of ways, not just marriage, but the family in general. And unfortunately, Hollywood is a very effective tool in doing just that. 860-1440 are the numbers. We will be right back with more on this topic.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Whoever is an avowed enemy of God, I scruple not to call him an enemy to his country. John Witherspoon, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Welcome back, all. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. If you want to weigh in, you can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. You can get in touch with us either way. We're perfectly fine with that. Because, you know, you may not be able to call in. You may be at work, at your cubicle. You may not have your cell phone on you. Doesn't matter. Log into Twitter. You can talk to us that way. We've been talking about this movie, Call Me By Your Name. It's a story about, for those of you just joining us now, it's a story about a 17-year-old boy and a 24-year-old man that engages him in a relationship. And the, you know, it really is, you would think that it would be some kind of story of abuse where the main character is the villain, but no. This is glorifying it, saying it's wonderful and talking about how great it is. That's really the purpose of this movie. And as was pointed out in this piece in the Boston Globe, a lot of the critics have been heaping praise on this thing. They'll say, well, yeah, the age thing is a problem, but by and large, it's just such a great movie. And then this person who is actually a victim of abuse, excuse me, in a situation not unsimilar to the one that the main character is in, talks about how dangerous this is to normalize it. And she's right, it is dangerous to normalize. She talks about a couple of different things in here, where she says one thing that could be a potential problem for this movie is that, A, teenagers see it, you know, different teenagers that may have somebody in their life around the same age as the person who goes after the 17-year-old and see this kind of relationship, and it could cause them to want that, could cause them to think that it's okay, cause them to accept that as a person that they should be able to be with. And so this is incredibly problematic for teenagers and could be dangerous for them, thinking that this kind of behavior is acceptable. And furthermore, it would be dangerous to the community as a whole, not just because it changes the perception of dating somebody that's underage, like I was just talking about, but it is dangerous because some of the things that are done in here are actually strategies that real abusers do use to groom teenagers into a sexual relationship, and they could use the things in that movie to help them seek out and obtain whatever person it is that they're going after at the time. So there's a lot of reasons why this movie, especially one glorifying it and talking positively about it the way that it is, could have detrimental effects on some people. And I think that this really goes back to the true face of Hollywood, which is blatant and unashamed hypocrisy. Remember, there was so much outrage at Kevin Spacey when they found out that he had drugged and had sex with a 14-year-old boy. He tried to save himself by essentially saying, well, the thing is, I am gay. And the sad thing is there were some people in Hollywood that originally took the bait, that made a bigger deal about him saying that he's homosexual and pretty much ignoring the fact that he just admitted to sleeping with a 14-year-old. That's not okay regardless of what sex they are. Obviously, it's worse if it's a homosexual relationship because that compounds it. But my point is, when it comes to Hollywood, they're not really concerned about this stuff. They push the envelope further on purpose. You could kind of see the same thing in the Me Too movement, where they were all supposed to wear black dresses to show solidarity with the women that have been abused after the Harvey Weinstein scandal. And in their protest, did you see the black dresses that they were wearing? Yeah, they were black, but they were basically handkerchiefs. I mean, I get it. Hollywood's filled with beautiful women. That's part of the business. But you can't say that you're against women being sexualized and then walk around in a dress that uses less material than a bath towel. This is how hypocritical these people, and they don't even sense the irony is what's funny about it. That it's so blatantly obvious to outsiders looking in how hypocritical the vast majority of them are, and they don't even see it. That they're supposed to be standing up for women and their rights and are wearing a dress that you wouldn't even wear in a sleazy bar as a cocktail waitress. So this is part of the problem people have with Hollywood. And they have been intentionally pushing this sexual perversion for decades. Now, I want to tell you about something, a conversation that my father and I had. He and I were talking about after the gay marriage thing passed. We had this discussion with each other. What would be next? What would be the next thing that Hollywood and the left starts glorifying? He thought it would be pedophilia. And I said, no, they're going to go for polygamy first. They're going to try to make having a relationship with three or four different people all at the same time, they're going to make that what's normal first. I really believe that. I thought that that was going to be an easier pill for people to swallow. I thought that there were going to be more people that would be okay with that and jump on it. He thought it was pedophilia, and I have to admit, my dad was right. That's the one they went for first. I really thought it was going to be polygamy, but apparently not. So now they're trying to glorify and normalize pedophilia. And I think that this shows that when you get off of the right path, when you get away from truth, and they originally did it, like I said, with divorce, saying that there was nothing wrong with divorce, that you just marry and it doesn't mean anything. You can marry someone, you divorce them, marry, divorce. And they started glorifying that in their movies, and then we started seeing it in the personal lives of the actors and actresses. And then it moved further downstream. We saw it. We saw homosexuality in the personal lives of actors and actresses. And then we started seeing that reflected in the medium, reflected in movies and TV. And we're going to see it again with this. We're seeing pedophilia with people like Kevin Spacey. We know that this has happened in the past with different actors, directors, that kind of thing. There's been stories about that. Now we're seeing it reflected in the medium. Once you get off that path, the sexual perversion is something that keeps going and going until somebody stops it. And Hollywood doesn't show any sign of slowing down. This movie is proof of that. Take it, Rush.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Galatians 5:1. It was for freedom that Christ set us free. Therefore, keep standing firm and do not be subject again to a yoke of slavery.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. And we've got two callers on the line, but we do have one line open. So if you want to go ahead and grab that extra line, you can, 860-1440, or tweet us at Tactics Radio. So let's go ahead and go to Miss Daisy. Good morning.
Good morning, dear. How are you this morning?
I'm doing quite well. How have you been?
I'm doing pretty good. I am very pleased to hear the subject, especially about the women. It's a disgrace. I don't know what they're asking for. You know, they walk around here with no clothes on, and then they keep saying the men are following them. Seems as though they're asking for, they say, come to me. And these mothers allowing these young girls to come out half-naked, and the mothers not no better. And, you know, they get somewhere, they're trying to pull their dress down and look all up their legs. And then I'm going to say this, I'm going to let you go.
Okay.
And it's not only just a dress, and then the top, you know, short, no bra on. What are they trying to prove, for God's sakes?
Well, and that's the thing. No man ever has any right to abuse or sexualize a woman, regardless of what she's wearing. But if you want that not to happen, there are things you can do to help prevent that.
I should stay home. Because it's a disgrace. And they just speak about the girls. No wonder we have so many teen pregnancy. I don't. And then these husbands, I can't see they allow their wives to come out looking like that. Like I just said, it's not only in Hollywood. You go to the stores and everywhere, showing their breasts. And it's a disgrace. It really, really is.
Well,
mothers, you need to do better. You need to do better. Now, they come into the churches the same way. And my pastor, he speaks about it. And I am very pleased that you brought this subject up. And one more thing.
Sure.
Folks, let me tell you, these other talk shows and so forth, now, those are what he's speaking about this morning, it needs to be said more than a lot of trashy trash. Something especially these young folks can gain from. Thank you, sweetie.
Thank you, Miss Daisy. I appreciate
it. Bye-bye, dear.
Yes, ma'am. Have a good one. And what Ms. Daisy was talking about is true, because there's a reason that we're called to modesty. There's a reason that we're called to not draw attention to ourselves, and that comes with humility. That part of the scriptural teaching on the way we dress, the way we act, the way we interact with one another is that we're supposed to be, not just women, men are supposed to be modest too. All these guys that have pictures of themselves with their shirts off and their abs showing, that's immodest as well. I realize it's not necessarily nudity, but I mean, that is showing off and trying to get attention and call attention to your physical being. That's not what we're called to do. We're called to be modest. We want people to see the spiritual side of us, not the physical side of us. And dressing in a provocative way, that distracts from that. That distracts from spirituality. Whatever things are good and lovely and decent, those are the things that we should be focused on and meditate on daily. That being said, let's go back to the phones. Let's go to, looks like we have Dennis on here. Good morning, Dennis.
Good morning, Caleb.
Yes, sir. What do you got to say?
Well, I tell you, let me start. First of all, let me say this here.
Okay.
I Dennis C. Latham, and One Latham TV have never gone out with my camera or One Latham TV to get dirt on anybody. I've only used One Latham TV to provide people with evidence, proof, and truth of what's going on in the community of actual proven solutions being put into action. It's all positive. So, since that was said on Cumulus, I want to clear that up. And as far as what Ms. Daisy said, I got to say this here. You know, it is a shame that mothers let their daughters go out, and something I saw in junior high that's new. They're wearing the see-through tops with no bra on. However, they have a suit jacket on, and sometimes they walk around. And this starts off in junior high. They do that in some high schools too. I'm not saying here in Montgomery, but I've seen it. Okay, and it's just not right, you know. So when the girl leans over, you can see down this jacket, and you can see, you know what I'm saying, right?
Yeah, you can see pretty much everything.
Right, and see, that's just not good, and they have brought it into the building that's fixed up, made up and painted up, look like a house of God. However, when that goes on, you know, and the preacher doesn't do or say anything about it and allows it, I don't feel like it's of God at that time. However, you know, some people say, well, they ain't supposed to be going to look at me. However, you're not supposed to go there to reveal things, so men will look, and women.
Well, that's the thing, Dennis. There's a difference between good attention and bad attention. I understand young women wanting attention from young men. That's natural. That's normal. There's nothing wrong with that. But if you're getting it in that way, first of all, that's calling their attention to something that they don't need to be focused on.
Yeah, it's to a sexual nature, a lustful nature, you know.
Right.
But if you want to get their attention, get something in your head.
Right. You know, you use your personality, you know, be charming, all that kind of thing. If a guy is only paying attention to you because basically he doesn't have to imagine what you look like naked because you're basically showing him off everything that you've got, well, then he's not focused on the right thing, and that is not the basis for a good relationship anyway.
And that's why you have a lot of babies being born out of wedlock. However,
unfortunately.
I just wanted to bring this little tiny thing up about Obama and the gay marriage stuff and things like that. Now, I know a lot of people who are, as myself, I'm for marriage between a woman and a man through Christ. Mm. That's of God. Now, that bed will cannot be defiled unless they defile it. Some people think it can't be defiled, so whatever they choose to do, it can't be defiled. If they want to bring another woman in, another man, and it can't be defiled, that's just a whole bunch of hogwash. However, the thing is, I heard that speech from Obama, and he says that he thinks that gay people should be able to get married. As the president, the Constitution, the Declaration of Independence, and the Bill of Rights, none of us even mentions marriage.
No.
However, I'm under the understanding that the laws of the land, and if you look at this, it's been pushed. What's her name? Ellen DeGeneres.
Mm-hmm.
Now, she was, she came out of the closet, and people know it, but look how big her show is. It's what the world accepts. And just like you got Anderson Cooper, you got Don Lemon. These are gay men that came out, but look how successful they are, and it's accepted. Look at all of the TV shows. The new TV shows got all come out, like Empire. They got the gay couple. Every show that comes out has got gay couples or gay people being gay.
Oh, yeah, it's mandatory. Every show that comes out, even, you know, ones that would be more geared towards kid, like comic book shows, Arrow, The Flash, they all have that one token gay character.
Right. I mean, it's just like even with the movies, you always got the killing, you always got the sex, you always got the nudity scenes, all of this type of stuff. And I like what Bill Cosby did in his shows, or type of thing where you see him heading to the bedroom, and then it fades out and goes to another scene. But they've gotten to the point now where they have to show every detail in the bedroom and all of the fornication and adultery.
However, yeah.
Let me say this here.
Yeah, go ahead. Go ahead.
I'm against gay marriage. However, if that's what they want to do, that's what they want to do. However, I seek ways through the Holy Ghost to show and teach people the wrongs in it. You understand what I'm saying?
I think I do. And that's actually one thing that the Christian community, and thank you so much for your call, Dennis. I appreciate it. That's one thing that the Christian community needs to do a better job of, is it's perfectly okay and it is acceptable to, when someone asks questions about homosexuality, to take them to verses in the Bible that talk about homosexuality. But the problem is, we don't need to just talk about why it's wrong. And I think that this was where Dennis was going on this, based on the way that he was saying it. We need to teach people why it's wrong. And the best way to do that is to teach them what works and what God's plan is and what is right. Because nothing makes wrong look more wrong than an example of how things are going correctly. You know, a line may not look crooked unless you put it next to a straight line. And so that displays the evil and the wrong behind it. And so one thing that I think that we can do a better job of as Christians, and maybe we haven't done such a great job of in this debate when it comes to homosexuality, is not only showing people that homosexuality is wrong, but explaining why it's wrong and why God's plan is one man and one woman for life. And that goes back to Matthew 19, that goes back to Ephesians 5, where it talks about the relationship between a man and a woman and why it works and how they complement each other, how they have different roles in the family that they fulfill, that they look after one another. See, that's one thing that a lot of liberals will crow about, especially in the Ephesians 5 account there, that it talks about women being in subject to their husbands. Well, yes, there is a level of subjectivity, but the Bible also says for us to be subject one to another in the church. Being subject doesn't mean obeying everything to the letter, regardless of what it is, but deferring to someone's leadership, their wisdom, taking into account who they are and their role with us, and that they're looking out for our best interests. And notice that all that language is conditional, because it also says in Ephesians 5, oh yeah, by the way, husbands, you have to be willing to give your own life for the woman you married. I mean, that's a big burden to shoulder, that you love your wife the same way that Jesus loved the church. That if there's something that you want to do, but there's something else that is for the benefit of your wife. You have to be willing to give up the things that you want to do in order to do what's best for her. You're responsible for her well-being and the well-being of your children. This works really well when both people are doing the absolute best that they can. And we all know couples like this. Especially if you go to church, and there are some great couples at my congregation that have been together 40, 50, sometimes 60 years. And the reason they've been able to do that is because they follow God's plan. And any kind of deviation from this plan, whether it be someone who's not mature enough to understand it, like it was in this movie with a young boy, or homosexuality, whether it's two men or two women, it doesn't work because they don't complement each other the way that God designed us to complement each other in these kinds of relationships. Men complement women emotionally, physically, in every conceivable way, because that's the way we were built and designed to do. And same thing vice versa for the women. And so showing people that, and showing people why not necessarily only that homosexuality is a sin, because people that don't care about God aren't going to care about that anyway, but to show that God's plan really does work in a very practical and real world way. That's how you're going to change hearts and minds. And we are going to talk about the FBI and the DOJ. There's an investigation going on there that we're going to talk about. This is new information that just came out. However, before I do, I want to talk to you about my good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. These guys have been in business for 50 years right here in the River region. And the reason that they have, it's not complicated. There's not some big company secret that they're hiding and hoarding onto. No. It's real simple. They treat their customers well, and they offer really great services at a fair price. That's all it is. They know that your car is important to you. They know that getting in and out as quickly as possible is important to you. And so they just focus on that. It's really not that hard. It's not that complicated. And because they do that, and because they do business in an honest way, in a way that satisfies their customers, people keep going back there, and that's how you stay in business for 50 years. It's not that complicated. They just work hard. That's all. That's what it all boils down to. Anything that they find while they're working on your car, too, and I love this about them, if they find a problem that you didn't necessarily bring it in for, and they say, hey, we did fix the thing that you told us about, but also you may want to take a look at this. You may want to do this ahead of time because it's starting to get, you know, problematic, and it's going to cause problems for you down the road. But they let you decide. They don't just go ahead and fix it and say, oh, yeah, and you owe us an extra $2,000. No, that's not how they operate. This is not a fly-by-night service where you show up one day, and then they give you back your car, and then they're out of business the next week. No, Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center puts you in the driver's seat. They let you make the decision, because they know it's your car and they know how big of an investment that is for you and your family. So go by and see my good friends at Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway right here in Montgomery. That is Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. All right, we'll be right back and talk about the investigation and the FBI and DOJ may be in hot water.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
I am a Christian in the only sense in which he wished anyone to be. Sincerely attached to his doctrines in preference to all others, Thomas Jefferson.
Welcome back, everyone. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Weird stuff going on at the UN. I may talk about that in an hour or two. I think I actually will talk about that. This is just breaking. I got this from Twitter just literally seconds ago, but for right now, I am going to keep my promise and talk about what's going on in the FBI and the DOJ, because this is of the utmost importance. Apparently, it was announced the other day that the FBI and DOJ are now being formally investigated by the House Intel Committee. Evidently, this has been at least been thought about and going on for a while, but it was announced that they are formally under investigation by the House Intel Committee. So why are they under investigation? What is it that they suspect the DOJ and the FBI have been involved in? Well, actually, the thing that might shed the most light on this is the memo coming out. Now, whether or not you like the memo, whether or not you think the memo will be true, it will at least give us some, whether you are Republican, Democrat, doesn't matter. You can look at this memo and at least get an idea of, if nothing else, what the Republicans think is going on in the FBI and the DOJ, and the reason that they are bringing this investigation. So I'm guessing once this memo comes out, we'll have a pretty good idea of why the Republicans are trying to look into what's going on at the DOJ and what happened during all of this. Most likely, this particular investigation focuses on what we've been talking about, what is in the FISA warrant with these different courts and how that was obtained with Donald Trump and his staff, how that warrant was obtained, what information was given to the judge, and whether or not the Obama administration was looking into this purely for political reasons so they had an in on the Trump campaign to help Hillary Clinton win. Also, it could be about the Clinton email investigation. We know how much controversy from both sides and how much criticism the FBI got from both sides on how that was handled. So they may be looking into that as well. I would not put it past them. If the Obama DOJ lied to the FISA judge or based the warrant that they used against Donald Trump on the dossier, the Steele dossier that came out, because they knew that was fallacious and they knew that that was not a dependable source of information, or they were politically motivated to get the warrant to spy, this could blow up in their faces. So that's three very realistic ways that this investigation could make the previous administration look really bad and possibly even bring up criminal charges. Now, we don't know that yet. That's jumping the gun. But that is three ways. If that's the way the investigation goes, if they find out any of those three things, that could be really, really bad for the Obama administration, for his legacy, and possibly even jail time. Now, I wouldn't put my money on that, but, you know, it is a possibility, something that we do need to consider. And I think what this all gets down to is this is why we have a Fourth Amendment. This is why when you get a warrant, you're supposed to have probable cause, a reason that you think this person is involved in illegal activity, not just a hunch, not just maybe they are, we think they might be. No. You have to have an actual reason why you think they are guilty of a crime and get a judge to agree and get a warrant with their name, what you're looking for, so on and so forth. That's why we have a Fourth Amendment, because people in England were using warrants to gain political gainsmanship over their political adversaries. What they would do is if they had somebody that they didn't like in the party in power, could go search their home just looking for something illegal. Don't know if they've committed a crime or not, but they have a hunch they might have committed a crime. And so they go diving and looking for a crime that could have been committed. That's more or less what these FISA warrants are. And they're done under the guise of, well, it's national security and they might be talking to foreigners, but they don't know that when a lot of these warrants are issued. And so they go in looking for things. That's why the FISA court system needs to be done away with entirely, because it causes problems like this. Now, keep in mind, this is technically a separate investigation from the Mueller investigation. This is not necessarily just focused on what Mueller is doing. So it is entirely possible these two could wound up getting linked, that they could be looking into the Mueller investigation, but we don't know that yet. We'll just have to wait and see. But this is important. It's important for political reasons. It's important because we need to be able to trust our law enforcement agencies. And we as average people are going to have to momentarily put politics aside and look at the evidence without any concern for which side it hurts. And to do that, we're going to need all the information we can. Hour two coming up.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
We just need a strategy, okay?
Okay, here's the plan.
Our UN representative Nikki Haley announces that we will no longer be giving aid to Palestinians unless they recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. The response was interesting. We go there now on Tactics. That's right, guys. Just one more day until the weekend. I'm very much looking forward to it. I'm sure that each and every one of you are, too. Now, probably not for the same reasons. I am going to a Super Bowl party at my church, but to be honest, I couldn't care less about the Super Bowl. I didn't even realize that the Patriots were in it until last night. I knew the Eagles were in it because a friend of mine is an Eagles fan, but really had no idea about what was going on. I'm just not an NFL guy. I know a lot of you guys aren't. Some of you are. But I just don't pay attention to it, and so I'm going to be at a Super Bowl party eating and talking to folks, but I doubt that I even watch more than one or two sets of downs of the game, so not really a big Super Bowl fan. The only one I really paid attention in is the one Cam Newton was in a few years ago when the Panthers were making their way through the playoffs. But anyway, that's really the only time I do pay attention to NFL. Getting back to the UN, though, this is, I got to tell you, if you gave me, I don't know, a year to come up with the news story that I'm about to reveal to you, I don't think I would be able to pull it off. This is one of the more bizarre stories I've ever shared with you, and that is saying something because you guys know I have a weakness for bizarre stories. So Nikki Haley is on the floor of the UN, our representative, who, by the way, has been killing it lately. I am becoming more and more a Nikki Haley fan as the days go on. I always liked Nikki Haley. I never had a problem with her per se, but the more time goes on and the more I see her interacting with the UN, the bigger a Nikki Haley fan I am. And she announces this morning that they are going to stop all foreign aid to countries that refuse to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital. Now, this is fascinating to me because we're basically bribing other countries to say, yes, Jerusalem belongs to Israel. But, I mean, I'm just against giving foreign aid anyway, so this is a win-win for me either way. Either the Palestinians say, yes, Jerusalem is Israel's capital, or we stop giving foreign aid to Palestinians. I'm good with that either way. It does not matter to me which outcome results from this ultimatum, I win. So I am great with this plan. But here's what happens. When this is announced, one of the representatives from Palestine, he starts, I'm not sure which country, but one of the Palestinian countries, I'm assuming, based on this tweet that I just got, and they have video of it happening. This guy, in response to Nikki Haley's announcement, takes out his phone, turns on some music, and goes down to the floor of the UN and starts dancing. That is a guy who is out of ideas. He has exhausted any ability he had to argue or make a comeback or anything else. All he's got left is, well, I'm going to go down there and I'll show her. I'm going to engage her in a dance-off, I guess. I don't know. You know, this shows you why the UN is so incredibly useless. You always think of the UN, you think of it as being all these very serious people sitting around in a circle having these intense discussions, that kind of thing. That's the way it's always portrayed. This is really more what would happen at Napoleon Dynamite. You remember that movie that they were having the school election for who's going to be school president, and Pedro's just not doing real well until all of a sudden his buddy Napoleon comes out and performs a dance and convinces everybody to vote his way? I think that's the strategy that is now being employed at the UN, at least by the Palestinians. Well, we can't convince them logically to support us, so we're just going to go down and dance. Now, granted, Nikki Haley announcing this isn't a UN thing. Like, it's not as though members of the UN have to vote on this. The U.S. spends its money how it wants to spend its money. But it was just absolutely hilarious to me that was their chosen response for this. You ever seen Guardians of the Galaxy, the original one? I know Volume 2 came out, and it was a really good movie as well. But if you've ever seen the original Guardians of the Galaxy, I feel like it's old enough now, it's like 5 or 6 years old, that I'm not giving away any spoilers by saying this. At the end of the movie, he's about to destroy the whole planet. He has the Infinity Stone. He has the ability to do that. The primary antagonist of the movie is about to completely destroy the planet that they were defending. And all of a sudden, he's about to drive his hammer into the ground, which will cause death and destruction on this planet to where he'll be the only one left. And like literally seconds before he does that, Peter Quill, the main character, starts dancing. And I guess this was, maybe he just saw Guardians of the Galaxy and that was his political strategy, because the dance distracts him long enough for somebody to get the Infinity Stone from him. And so maybe that was his strategy. He had just seen Guardians of the Galaxy. You know, it takes a little longer for movies to come out overseas in different languages. So maybe that just came out over there. And he was watching Guardians of the Galaxy and he was like, I should do that the next time something happens at the UN that I don't like. I'll just distract them long enough to get their Infinity Stone. I don't know where this came from, but it really does feel like it's a weird feeling, really. Because as somebody whose job is to follow the news and to keep up with world events, that kind of thing, it seems as though each morning I wake up, the world has gotten just a little bit more ridiculous. And maybe that's just because I'm consuming more news, or I know more about it, or I grow. And because of that, it looks more ridiculous to me. I don't know. But it seems as though we really are, we're wandering into the Twilight Zone. I already had the story about the stupid straws, them making it a crime in Hawaii and California to distribute straws to people. Because plastic straws are really what need to be the focus in our world right now. And I don't know. Maybe this is just a feeling for me. Maybe it's different for y'all, but I feel like the world is just descending into chaos. And I don't even necessarily mean, on some level, I am worried that it's descending into chaos in the sense that it could be getting very dangerous soon. But also, we have taken such leave of our senses and we've invented so many of our own problems because realistically, in our day-to-day lives, we have so few problems. I mean, there's not drought or famine or anything like that. So we start inventing problems for us to have, like the stupid straw thing, that it just feels like the world continues to get more and more ridiculous as time goes on. And this whole thing with the Palestinians is a representation of that, I think. But getting more to the point and the actual serious matter behind all this, I don't understand why we were ever giving foreign aid to Palestine anyway. Find me the authority in the Constitution where it says that we are supposed to be giving handouts to other countries, taking money from our citizens and giving it to other nations. I said this to Donald Trump. Even though I was not a Trump supporter at the time, I was never Trump because I'm not never Trump now because whomever the president is, even if it were Hillary Clinton, I try to give them a clean slate and try to give them a chance to prove themselves when they become president and actually take that office. But back in the campaign, I said this to Donald Trump and his supporters. If you want Mexico to build the wall, I realize that this technically isn't Mexico paying for the wall, but the closest thing that I could come up with in how Mexico would be paying for the wall is as much money as we're giving to Mexico and other countries. All we would have to do is shut off foreign aid to Mexico for about, I did the calculations at the time, I think it was maybe 3 or 4 years, and we would have more than enough money to completely fund the border wall because of how much money we give to Mexico because they're a crappy country that can't take care of its own citizens. That's all we would have to do. 3 or 4 years of that, and if they ask why, we would tell them, well, you can't run your own border and you can't secure your own border, so we're going to have to secure it. And that money's got to come from somewhere. Now, personally, as a constitutionalist, I would be thrilled at the prospect of just stopping foreign aid altogether. I don't understand why we do it. I don't get that at all. Especially in countries that there is no military strategic advantage to doing so. Like, building up defenses in South Korea, I get that. That's a matter of our national security. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about just giving money to foreign governments, and they do who knows what with it. That's the problem we have with giving money to countries like Haiti. I got nothing against the Haitian people. I actually know people that have done mission work in Haiti. My problem with giving money to Haiti is it never winds up in the people's hands. The corrupt bureaucrats running their country take it. And that's what happens in Palestine. And so my question is, why were we giving foreign aid money to Palestine in the first place? Those countries do not need American dollars. especially when they hate us. Certain countries there, they have protests and riots in the streets where they're burning the American flag in effigy, chanting death to America. Many of these countries harbor terrorists. And sometimes the actual government we're giving money to harbors terrorists too. They just do it as much in secret as they can. So why are we giving foreign aid to these people? That should have stopped a long time ago. And that's where I'm going to right now. That even though this is a silly little anecdote of the Palestinians really having no logical argument for why the American people would be giving the money in the first place, so all they can come up with is, let's perform a dance. The dance of our people, I don't know. But I do want to give kudos to Nikki Haley and President Trump, because when the U.S. announced and President Trump announced that we were going to recognize Jerusalem as Israel's capital, which even freaking Bill Maher acknowledged made sense. Israel has been in control of that land for decades now. They won it fair and square in a war that they were not the aggressors in. And even uber-left liberal Bill Maher said, I hate to disagree with Donald Trump, but he's right on this. I don't understand why we haven't been acknowledging Jerusalem as Israel's capital all this time. When even Bill Maher can say that, you know that it makes sense. I don't understand why we haven't been acknowledging all this time as Israel's capital either. But good for the Trump administration for doing this, good for them standing their ground, and good for them standing up for what is right. And this is one more example of that happening. We've got Upon Further Review with Joe Hunt coming up in just a second.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Matthew 22:37-40. And he said to him, you shall love the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul and with all your mind. This is the great and foremost commandment. The second is like it. You shall love your neighbor as yourself. On these two commandments depend the whole law and the prophets.
Welcome back, everybody. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. You can also tweet us at Tactics Radio. Now, I know I've been away for a while, but it is Thursday, and everybody knows what that means. It is time for Upon Further Review.
After review, we're rooting on the field.
If you can talk sports, you can talk with any guy in the world.
When sports and politics meet, it deserves a second look.
After further review, the player disqualification is reversed.
Here with the ruling, it's Caleb Colquitt and Sports Radio 740's Joe Hunk with Upon Further Review.
Welcome back to the studio, Joe.
Do I call you my 76er? Is that what I'm calling you now?
Yeah, I'm playing as the 76ers in our tournament. So
yeah, we've got an awesome tournament that we're going over on Facebook Live, and it is 740 Game Room. It's an NBA tournament, but I and a lot of us understand that NBA basketball really isn't big here until like the NBA Finals itself. So
which does last 6 months.
It does. So yeah, see, so we'll be able to talk about it for that long.
Right.
But with this. The game that we're playing, which is NBA 2K18, which is such a good basketball game, they have retro teams. So we said, how about we do a tournament and you can have the ability to play as any retro team that you want. So we did our draft yesterday, which you can go over onto our Facebook page at Sports Radio 740. Go to the video section. It's right there. And you got the 1976 76ers. So you get to play as Dr. J.
Yeah, I do. And one of the things that I was looking forward to, honestly, part of the reason that I did some research on this, because honestly, organically, I don't know much about the NBA. It's not something that I really follow. And so the 76ers, I was looking at their past teams because I wanted to play as Barkley.
Yeah.
Honestly, that's what
it was. And that was what I was most shocked about. And I don't know if this is a deal that with – there's some players. Like, for instance, the Indiana Pacers. We learned yesterday, because we were all looking for teams and we was going through and killing time and seeing who had what.
Right.
Reggie Miller's not on the game.
Really?
Reggie Miller isn't on the game. So you start going, wait a second. So like the 97 Pacers, which was the team that took the Bulls to game 7 in the Eastern Conference Finals before they beat them and went to play the Jazz again, that team isn't on there. And you start looking at the great Pacers teams, you're going, that was one of the greatest Pacers teams of all time. You look at the OJ team. That's what we call it. Was it the Knicks and the Knicks and the Pacers that were playing whenever the OJ chase was happening? I think that's what it was. Maybe it was somebody else. But that when Reggie Miller went and drained like three threes in the matter of like 9 seconds, that team isn't on there. So I think it may be like with Charles, it may be an NBA PA thing where the Players Association.
There might be some kind of legal rule or something that's keeping them from doing that. Because that's the only explanation I can come up with.
That Houston Rockets team that he was on wasn't on there, which, again, there was a fantastic basketball team.
I looked for them, too.
The Phoenix Suns team, the 93 team that played the Bulls in the championship, that team wasn't on there. And obviously his 76ers teams wasn't on there. So I think that it's an NBA PA thing.
Yeah, it must be. But before we do get into what I actually had planned for us to talk about, I wanted to mention this. The other day I'm coming into work. I think this was actually Friday, my first day back, and I noticed that your car was in the parking lot.
Yes.
Which is surprising because usually you get here a little bit after me because I have to get here a little bit before 9. You usually get here right at 9.
Yes, yes.
And so I saw your car already here, and I thought out loud, and I was like, hey, it's the Hunkmobile. And then I thought about it, and I was like, I really shouldn't call it that because it sounds like a float in a gay pride parade.
It sounds like that, and it also sounds something like what the Chippendales will roll up into whenever they're going to a show. Maybe whenever you go to Vegas, and it's like those Australian dancers that they have all the billboards for.
Right.
They're going, ladies, come outside. Right. The Hunkmobile has arrived.
That's what it sounds like, and so I got to come up with a different name for your
ladies,
ride.
Ladies, turn your attention to stage number one. We
lock
have
up your daughters.
Donnie.
Lock up your wife.
Donnie is on the stage.
Why Donnie?
I don't know. It was the only thing. It was the only thing I could think of that wasn't Magic Mike related. I don't know.
Okay, well, fair enough. But anyway, I did want to talk about this because this is something that, I mean, we were talking about NBA is not really my thing.
No.
I follow the MLB. That's my sport.
Oh, yeah, and baseball is coming back. The only and if you've ever listened to the show, you realize I don't celebrate Valentine's Day. That was a big fight that me and my wife had for many years, and we've kind of come to an understanding now.
Right.
For me, Valentine's Day is always going to be pitchers and catchers are reporting. I don't celebrate the holiday whatsoever. But pitchers and catchers report on February 13th and 14th. That's how I celebrate that day.
Right.
That my love of baseball. So, yes, I am there with you, my friend.
Yeah, well, with one thing that was incredibly controversial and really bothered me, because I am a baseball fan and I'm kind of a baseball purist and I love the tradition and I love the history. They're getting rid of Chief Wahoo.
I know, and it sucks so bad because I went to New Hope High School and I was a New Hope Indian. That's our mascot, the New Hope Indians. And from the time that I was probably, I'll even say 3 and 4 years old, I knew who Chief Wahoo was. Mm-hmm. And when our varsity team used to do, the head coach used to do one of these little camps that they would do where one day was fielding, one day was hitting, one day, you know, all this other stuff, base running, that sort of stuff. Yeah. But they would always send out the pamphlets. Chief Wahoo was always on the front. Mm-hmm. And so I literally would get this pamphlet every single year and I would just sit there and trace over him and draw him and stare at Chief Wahoo. And I would take it and I'd get a sheet of paper and I'd trace it on that sheet of paper. Like I literally grew up around this mascot. When I got to middle school, our hats were the Cleveland Indians hats. Mm-hmm. When I got to high school, we were then going to use the Chief Wahoo as our logo, but we swapped to red hats. So I have had this hat on sweatshirts, on T-shirts. I have it on workout shorts. I have this logo everywhere in my house from all of my high school stuff. I hate that they have changed this.
Yeah, it drives me crazy. And I think the reason that it drives Cleveland fans especially crazy.
Yeah.
Is not just because of the fact that they're doing it,
yeah,
but also the way that they're handling it.
Right.
Because
it's being forced on them.
Right. It would be one thing if they just said, yeah, the logo's kind of old and outdated. We've had it forever. We're looking at updating it.
Yeah.
If they had presented it that way as opposed to it's offensive when we're banishing it.
Yes.
That's what bothers people.
Well, and for me, and this is where it comes into with the Washington Redskins. And even people want to talk about Chief Nakahoma, which we totally started researching this over on 740.
I miss Chief Nakahoma.
Well, see, the original Chief Nakahoma, see, this is where it's crazy. He was actually an Indian. Mm-hmm. Like, he was a real-life Indian. He had his teepee in Fulton County Stadium, and this was all something that the Braves used. He would go out on promotions. This is no joke. before games, and Braves fans, if you watch, because the Braves kind of sucked at the time, he would go out onto the mound and like blow fire and do like an Indian dance.
Oh, yeah, there was a whole performance going on.
Why on earth have the Braves not brought this back? This is so awesome. This is the coolest thing. And you know, people want to say, well, you know, it's racist because the face is red and all this. This is where I look at it from a 33-year-old that was born in 1984 that grew up around Chief Wahoo, Chief Nakahoma, and the Washington Redskins winning Super Bowls in the early 90s. I don't look at it. I don't put the same connection that people that want to say it's offensive puts.
Well, and here's another thing that bothers me about it. And this comes from somebody who has extensive experience in researching the history of broadcasting, all that stuff, and I love cartoons. It's a cartoon.
Yeah.
Yes, it's exaggerated. It's a cartoon.
Everything's exaggerated.
Right.
You watch Family Guy and American Dad.
But that's how cartoons work. Like, Yosemite Sam is a stereotype of a white guy who wears cowboy hats and cowboy boots, which is what I am.
From the Civil War.
Yeah, and it's extremely exaggerated. He's got the beard or the mustache that goes down to his feet. He's got the hat that's larger than his body.
Yes.
I mean, exaggeration is what cartoons are.
And this is where is... If everybody saw this, and that's the thing is the people that look at it, I look at that logo and I don't look at it as racism towards a Native American. I've never thought that.
I'm in part Native American, not a lot, but there's most people in the South.
Exactly,
have that.
Most people in the state of Alabama are at some point in time connected to Cherokee somehow.
Right.
I mean, we all have Native American blood in us. I mean, I have friends that literally get checks from Wetumpka. I mean, you know, it's that sort of connection. And I can't sit here and say that, you know, I always embrace my Native American heritage mainly because I haven't done the 23andMe thing, and I'm not 100% sure at how much it is.
Well, see, that's the thing, too. I know it's in me. I don't know how much it is. I think that's most people.
But I took it more as a badge of honor. And that's how I looked at it. When I had that logo on and I was wearing it, I didn't look at it as I am being something racist. I would seriously wear it as this is who I am. You know, I am an Indian. I'm a New Hope Indian.
Well, think about this. I've always seen it as kind of being a tribute.
Yes.
Because look at the other teams that have human mascots. Pirates, Warriors, the Musketeers for Xavier.
Yes.
All these things, they're some kind of, it's always a tribute to them because they're fierce. They put fear into the enemy. That's why they use them as the mascot. It's something that when we're looking at Native Americans, it's really honoring their culture that they were such fantastic warriors. I mean, if you look at the history of it, and I don't want to get too far off on this tangent, but the Native Americans are the reason we won the Revolutionary War because our forefathers had to fight Native Americans for land, and their battle strategy of hiding behind trees, camouflage.
Guerrilla warfare.
Right. That's how we beat the British because they all wore red and marched in a straight line.
Yeah.
And so...
Well, I see it as, you know, when I was a kid...
to this day, the Apache, their fighting strategy is still used by the Army Green Berets.
Well, when I was a young kid, and I mean like 91, when the Braves made it to the World Series for the very first time against the Minnesota Twins, and then again in 1995, like I would sit and I'd watch television, and I was like, oh, they're about to talk about the Braves, and they're like, people are outside Fulton County Stadium before game one protesting the fact that the Cleveland Indians and Atlanta Braves are, you know, doing this to the Native American, and I'm going, what on earth are you talking about?
Right.
Like
if you're not a social justice warrior, that doesn't even register in your mind.
No, I don't look at it that way whatsoever. I mean, you look at the idiotic portrayal of an Oriole on the Baltimore Orioles heads right now. Do we have people that are saying that they're doing injustice to the Baltimore Oriole or to an Oriole period?
I mean,
there are people right now that want to and are trying to protest about the tiger that lives down in Baton Rouge.
Yeah.
And actually
Mike the Tiger.
Yeah, Mike the Tiger directly beside Tiger Stadium. That dude has the best life in the world.
Oh, people have said the same thing about our Eagles.
He has the best life in the world. He doesn't have to worry about ever being hunted. He gets fed 3, 4, 5 times a day. He literally can, whenever, if this was an option, he wanted to breed, he could. I mean, it's literally one of the greatest lives ever, and people are saying that they're being tortured when they are living an amazing life and being treated truly like kings. They have to be, but they also have veterinarians there that want to take care of them to make sure that they are healthy animals and live this way. Look at this. Seriously, the last Mike the Tiger, which was, I mean, I went and saw this Mike the Tiger 2 years ago. He came down with cancer. Like, they literally did not want him to suffer, and they were able to make sure that he did not suffer. If this tiger would have been in the wild, it would have suffered.
A lot.
A lot, and would probably still be suffering today. But you're looking at the ways that people are looking at this in a way that I don't think that they're thinking it. They just want to be offended by something, but then they turn it around and they actually ruin it for people that want to do it and pay homage to whatever they want to pay homage
to.
Well,
and like I've said, there is a certain slice of the population that I think they do nothing but wake up and actually go on their computers looking for something to be outraged about.
Well, I wish that they would have at least done a poll with season ticket holders or something along those lines. And if the season ticket holder's like, no, I want to keep it, then all right. Our customers want to keep it.
Actually, speaking of polls, since you know I'm a statistics guy.
Yes.
I have a poll done by the Washington Post on what Native Americans think of this.
Oh, I love this.
And we will go to that when we come back.
Okay.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt. Every weekday from 9 to 11. Only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.
Speaking of the Seminoles,
it's John Anderson.
Yes, it is.
I love this song, man.
It is a great song. I love the music video.
The music video was legit. He's around a fire singing the whole
time. Yeah. Oh, yeah. It was so cool.
That was an awesome video.
But yeah, I thought that would work. Actually, I think probably from a PR standpoint, the Indian-themed team that does the best job with that has got to be the Florida State Seminoles.
Well, they have gotten, if I remember the story correctly, they have gotten the permission from the local Seminole tribes.
The tribe actually helps.
And I'm pretty sure that Florida State also donates money to them.
Yeah.
Which may be a part of this that I'm curious about is if this whole thing would be such a big deal if the Cleveland Indians and Washington Redskins actually donated money to their local Native American tribes.
Yeah, if they did that, I think it would go a long way in helping with this. And speaking of that, and this is one of the things that I was talking about right before we got to a break, the Washington Post actually did a poll of over 500 Native Americans, and they found in their results, which was a nationwide poll, that of the people they reviewed, 90% of Native Americans were not offended by the Washington Redskins name, and a little over 70% actually said that they didn't have an issue with the word redskin in general. So they don't even see it as a slur, even if you're not using it in the context of the Washington Redskins. And here's the thing that a lot of people don't know about the history of that. The term redskin, the first historical use of it was by an Indian chief. Mm-hmm. And he used it to describe himself and his people to distinguish himself from white people.
Right.
So it came from Indians. They came up with the name, not white people. It wasn't used as a slur to disparage people or anything like that. It was just a term that acknowledged, just like we talk about black people.
Yeah.
It's just saying that their skin is darker than ours. That's all it means.
Right. I got you.
And so, you know, a lot of people don't know the history of that, but a lot of the people that see it as a slur or some kind of racist thing now, they just don't know the history behind it.
Right.
And a lot of them have never talked to an actual Native American about it either. But anyway. So yeah, by and large, the people that they're so worried about offending, that's not the people that it's actually offending. It's mostly offending a bunch of white people that have liberal guilt and are worried about it from that standpoint.
Yeah, that'll also be a thing for them at many times.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hey, why don't we go ahead and go to the phones? We got Cooper on line one. Good morning, Cooper.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind?
I'm enjoying the show. In the last segment, I think you made an innocent mistake, though, when you were talking about your ancestry.
Right.
Very, very, very few people in Alabama have any Native American DNA. If you did a DNA test, you would more than likely find out your heritage is either Irish, British, or German.
Oh, so yeah, I was always told differently growing up. So then, yes, that is a mistake because I was always told differently. Yeah, right. Yeah.
So was Senator Warren, but
yeah, I mean, again, I'd always heard that, and even again, and it may be because it is in my family, so we always talked about it. So I don't know. I mean, again, I've always wanted to do one of those heritage or ancestry things to see.
Yeah.
Well, now mine,
I know for a fact that I have it from Cherokee and Shawnee on both sides.
See, I was always told Cherokees. That's the reason why we said that.
If you are, I mean, that's great. Yeah.
But right, what you're saying is the vast majority of the population doesn't.
Oh, okay. Well, sweet. No, I didn't know that at all. I thought the whole state, we all kind of was all in one tribe together.
A lot of people claim it. I don't know if they all actually have it.
Yeah, most of us came, like I say, from Ireland, Britain, Germany, down. Most immigrated to Maryland, Virginia, North Carolina, and South Carolina. And then from there on down to Georgia and into Alabama.
Oh, sweet!
That was pretty much how it went.
Oh, well, cool. Well, thanks for that. Because I was always told differently, so I appreciate you letting me know about that.
Yeah, thanks for the call. I do appreciate that. Now on mine, my grandfather, my father's father, his side is all Irish, British, everything. But on my grandmother's side, Cherokee.
Okay, so in the state of Alabama, is it required in fourth grade by everybody to take like Alabama history?
Yes, it still is.
See,
as far
I think
as
that's
I know.
Maybe where that came from for me. Is we did the Alabama history and it was like part of it, and you start learning about how, you know, the state was formed and at the beginning parts of it, and it was, oh yeah, you know, the northern Alabama had, you know, all these Cherokee tribes and all this. Now again, I truly think that that's where that information came from for me, and I really thought that that was that way for the entire state. Like,
well,
I thought it was all just one big tribe.
Really, that probably would have been the way that it was had it not been for Andrew Jackson and the Trail of Tears.
Gotcha.
Because they mobilized specifically from the state of Alabama and other places in the South, people out to places like Oklahoma and that kind of thing. One of the reasons that Andrew Jackson is one of my least favorite presidents, but...
You got a top 10 list?
Oh, I've got a top 10 and a bottom 10. I won't go into all that now, but...
It's okay. I mean, I have top 10 lists, but they don't involve greatest or worst presidents. But then again, I also haven't researched it as much as you have.
Well, you know, it is my job. So
yeah,
that's
again,
part of it.
You can ask me top 10 and worst, you know, and bottom 10 head football coaches in college football. I could probably give that to you, or even Major League Baseball.
Is Bruce Pearl in there?
Bruce Pearl is probably in the top five as far as coaches are concerned right now.
I think Bruce Pearl wins Coach of the Year this year.
He should win it.
If it keeps going on the trail that
it
is.
He should win it. And I mean, it's so funny with Auburn basketball right now because there's a thing called baiting. Like, we'll bait sometimes. You know, we'll say something, and I say we don't do it often, but you'll make an asinine statement because you know that it will get a certain fan base fired up. There's people that are legendary at making those statements and doing it. You can't bait the Auburn fan base in anything when it comes to Auburn basketball right now. Because it's literally them sitting back and just enjoying what's going on. Like, it's like being on vacation and just not wanting it to end. Because it's a place you've never been before. I mean, seriously, think about it. It was 19. This team keeps being compared to the 98-99 team.
Yeah,
and
which I remember Chip Ellis, but just vaguely.
Yeah,
and I'm 28.
Well, and you know, Chris Porter, Mamadou Njai, like those players, like they keep getting compared to those. And you look at the Auburn fan base now, and that seriously has been 20 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's been 20 years. The last time that team was good, I was like in ninth grade, around ninth grade is when I was, because it was 98-99, And I don't even remember this team being that amazing. I remember Chris Porter. I remember getting—I want to say it was the Dreamcast when him and Mamadou Njai were both in the NBA, and I was doing—you could do two-on-two tournaments for the first time.
Well, that dates you quite a bit just having a Dreamcast.
Dude, Crazy Taxi, man. Crazy Taxi was legit. But I would play as Chris Porter and Mamadou Njai just because I was playing as two Auburn players. And it's so funny now because look at it this way, and this is what I say about with Auburn and Alabama fans is— There's this whole process. If you would have asked the Auburn fan base going into 2017, what would have been considered a successful football season? Like asking you, what do you think a successful football season would have been for the Auburn Tigers this football season?
See, to me, it's getting a really good bowl game and winning it and having, you know, about 9 to 10 wins.
Okay, there we go. 9 to 10 wins. So Auburn fan base is, all right, 9 to 10 wins. For the Auburn fan base, it's, you get to 10 wins, Gus Malzahn stays. That's kind of where it was. If you get to, if it's 9 wins, then he's probably gone. You got to 10 wins this season, and the Auburn fan base was just livid because you don't realize what comes with that goal. You know, okay, well, we want 10 wins. Well, if you've got 10 wins, do you want 10 wins before you enter the last 2 weeks of the regular season, or do you want 10 wins once regular season ends? Because there's a potential there that if you have 10 wins going into the last 2 weeks of the season, you're in a chance to potentially play for a national championship.
Right.
So then those emotions start getting attached, and you want more than 10 wins. We've already banked the 10 wins. Mm-hmm. Hey, we've got the 10 wins. Let's move forward. You look at the basketball team now, and for me, and I look at even with Alabama basketball, Alabama and Auburn basketball, if you just set a general goal for these two basketball teams this year, what would they have been?
I honestly don't know, but I know that Auburn's team has greatly exceeded the expectations of about 90% of the fan base.
The Auburn fan base basically said, we just want to get to the tournament.
Right.
We brought you in to get us to the tournament. Avery Johnson, we have brought you in to get us to the tournament. Right now, Auburn is not only in the tournament, they are pushing for a number one seed in the tournament.
Right.
Now, here's where this gets a little – this is where it gets a little weird, just like what we were talking about with football.
Mm-hmm.
Now you're here. Now you're 18, 19, 20, and 2, and you're also about to become a top 10 basketball team in the country, because when the next ratings come out, Auburn should be somewhere around 9 or 10.
Right, after beating Ole Miss.
Yeah, after beating Ole Miss, and you got Vandy this weekend, so you should win this game. Now you're looking at a top 10 basketball team. So now, just making the tournament, which was your original goal, now seems like it's a failure.
Right, it wouldn't be good enough
now. If Auburn right now were to go in, play in the tournament, 2-3 seed, lose the first game, Auburn fans would be livid. Can't believe Bruce Pearl got us here and we lost the first basketball game. We were a 2 seed. We were a 3 seed. How dare this? Your goal originally was just to get to the tournament.
That's actually what I said to one of my buddies, who's also an Auburn grad. That's how I knew him, is through Auburn. I said, look, if I had told you before the season started, if I told you back in August that this team was going to beat number one Georgia and number one Alabama back-to-back, you would have said, this is going to be a great season.
Yep.
And now he's mad because we wound up, you know, laying an egg against Georgia in the SEC championship and against, in our bowl game. So
there are certain coaches, and this is how I look at with certain Andy Kennedy over at Ole Miss, who Auburn just beat. He is a great basketball coach. He is a coach that can get you to the tournament. He can build a program that can get you to the tournament on kind of a regular basis because Ole Miss has kind of been there. Is he the coach to take what that team is and take it from getting you to the tournament to getting you to the Sweet 16, getting you to the Elite Eight, getting you to the Final Four? I don't think he's that coach. Gus Malzahn is a great coach that can get you 9 to 10 wins a year, beat Alabama every once in a while, possibly win you an SEC championship, but is he going to be the head coach that can get you to and win a national championship? I don't think he is, but he is what he is. He's much better than the other 7 or 8 other coaches in the SEC. But you just have to understand what you have as a coach. Now, again, I'm not a fan, but it doesn't mean that he isn't a good coach.
No, you do have to be realistic about that, and we have to go to the chaplain's report. But thank you so much, Joe. Appreciate you being here. Always great to have you. We'll talk to you again next week.
I'm just glad to be back on, man.
I know. It's been, what, a month now?
Like 3.
Good gracious. Well, we'll be back
Things
next week.
Things happen, man.
Lord willing, we'll be back next week on Thursday with Upon Further Review.
All right.
All right, chaplain's report is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back. You are listening to Tactics on News Radio 1440 and News Radio 1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers. The chaplain's report is on. And actually, I thought we'd do something interesting today, because the scripture that I'm going to be sharing with you is actually one that we have probably played on here 100 times or more, because it comes from Hebrews. It's one of the ones that I use as one of my intros, actually. And so it comes from the 13th chapter of Hebrews, verses 5 and 6. Make sure that your character is free from the love of money, being content with what you have. For he himself has said, I will never desert you, nor will I ever forsake you. So that we confidently say, the Lord is my helper, I will not be afraid. what will man do to me? Now, I could go a lot of different directions because there's so much in this scripture that you could talk about. But I thought it was fascinating that he connects the love of money and contrasts it with having faith in God. Why is that? I think it's because we as human beings tend to think of material goods, money, as being a sense of security. And people put their faith in the fact that they're able to sustain themselves, that they have this security net that they have. But the thing is, material blessings, they can come and go in an instant. If you don't believe me, ask Job. You can have a storm or a natural disaster or something happens in the stock market. Everything that you own can be gone in an instant. One thing that never goes away is the promise of God, the promise of his salvation and eternal life. That's something that we can always bank on, and we should be grateful for that. Stay the course, friends.
Tactics with Caleb Colquitt, every weekday from 9 to 11, only on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.